With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the Top Order Podcast. No intro music today. I don't even know why I'm talking. I feel like I should just be stepping away from the microphone. You know, just some remarkable innings. People aren't here to see me. People aren't here to talk. People are here to hear Baldy jumping off the back fence to talk about one of the most remarkable innings we've ever seen, one of the most remarkable games of this World Cup. Australia, Afghanistan, let's just get to it, Baldy.
Good morning, Stuart, and good morning to listeners and viewers all around the world who are tuning in to what has been one of the most remarkable, if not the most remarkable, run chase that I think we've ever seen in the history of one-day international cricket. Certainly in World Cups from 1975 to now, I can't think of a more remarkable, more complex, more outstanding run chase than the one that we've witnessed overnight at the Wankhede Stadium between Australia and Afghanistan. It was a chase that was in completely two halves, and there was a couple of turning points, but there was one in particular, and I'm sure we'll get onto it in the podcast, where the complexion of this match, if not the fortunes of Afghanistan in this tournament, completely reversed themselves. It is a performance from a player who has tantalized us throughout his career. He's teased us. He's promised so much to Australian cricket fans and fans of world cricket in general with his prodigious, almost unparalleled talent. Tonight, it was all on display. We got to see the very, very best of a player who, if depending on who you believe, may or may not have called himself the Big Show. From now on, for the rest of his cricketing career and afterwards, he can call himself whatever he likes. That was one of the greatest innings, and I know that commentators love to throw superlative out there, but believe Ian Smith when he says that it was one of the most remarkable innings that we will ever see on a cricket field. Not just because of the scoreline, not because of the situation, not just because of the cramp or the ability to bat and hit sixes out of the park on literally no legs, with no legs to stand on. It was an unbelievable innings. And if I hadn't have gone back and watched almost every ball of Maxwell's innings between 5:30 this morning and now when we started recording, I wouldn't have believed it myself. I certainly didn't believe it was possible when at 3:48 this morning, I woke up, looked at Crick Info, saw Australia were 93 for 7 and put the phone down and went straight back to reading. We're stuck in the matrix, Stuart. This is a parallel universe where this kind of thing just doesn't happen, but yet happened it has.
It was just incredible. And look, the like you say, the superlatives are going to come out today. And I think we're going to be filled with superlatives as well for Glenn Maxwell. And what a week for him. I mean, you know, the headlines last week for him were, you know, you've fallen off a golf cart, concussion, you know, all the, I guess, negative storylines for him. And then he comes out and does this. It actually is amazing. And I know normally we sort of get the initial comments and initial thoughts of the people on the pod, and then we kind of go back to the start. But I think we just have to keep going with the finish here, because it was just amazing. And I sort of did the same. You talked about waking up. I woke up about 5 o'clock in the morning, checked my phone. Yeah, for listeners who don't know, we're based in New Zealand. So yeah, just, you know, we do our very best to watch as much of the cricket as we can. But, you know, inevitably we're watching ball by ball, sort of skimming through ball by ball highlights in the morning as quickly as we can. And I woke up at five and thought, okay, I'll see who's won this game, what I need to focus on for this morning. And it's turn it on. Australia needs 70 off about 70 balls. And I just immediately jumped out of bed. I've never been more delighted to see Glenn Maxwell get runs from a New Zealand point of view, because New Zealand needed this. If Afghanistan wins this game and they're sort of not quite in the box seat, I guess, because their run rate would have been, potentially still a factor. But, you know, the fact that they were carving up Australia, as you said, 91 for 7 it was at one point. They win big against Australia here, and you know, New Zealand would have been in huge trouble. So I'm very, very grateful for Glenn Maxwell as a New Zealand fan this morning.
Well, the game certainly didn't go to script for Australia. Certainly it didn't go to how I thought the game would go. I expected Australia to win and win comfortably. But let's give some credit to some Afghani players in this game, because Ibrahim carried his bat throughout the innings, scored a brilliant 129, and put them in a box seat to be able to win this game. 291 is not an easy chase. He was excellent. I actually thought Australia's bowling, Maxwell's innings will cover up for many things in this game, but Australia's bowling again looked like it wasn't able to penetrate the Afghanistan lineup, particularly in the power play. It's something we've touched on in the podcast before. It remains a real concern for me, because Australia, outside of Adam Zampa, haven't really been able to make inroads into the top order or middle order at all. Afghanistan, look, I had it in my notes after watching the first innings. Afghanistan are an incredibly professional cricketing outfit with the bat. And I don't mean that in the condescending, oh, aren't they a good side because, you know, we need to give plaudits to an emerging nation. They have made Australia's bowlers, who are some of the best bowlers in the world, look military medium. They were outstanding. And I think that the Afghanistan, and it will be lost in the outcome of all of this Glenn Maxwell hype and hyperbole, and as it should be, but Afghanistan need to take a lot of credit, particularly for their batting in this tournament, because they have shown themselves to be equal to, if not slightly better at times, than some of the best attacks in world cricket. I mean, you have a look at Ibrahim's innings as a 21, 22-year-old against Stark, Cummins, Hazelwood. He handled them all with aplomb, and he was outstanding. And unfortunately, his innings will be consigned to the back pages of history behind this Glenn Maxwell innings. But he should look back on this game and be incredibly proud of the innings he played against a top-class attack, because it gave him the opportunity to put his team in a position where they really should have won this match.
Oh, totally. I mean, that's the first, I believe that's the first ODI World Cup 100 for Afghanistan from Ibrahim. And, you know, we were texting right at the start of that game, and we saw that first over, Stark started swinging the ball, and like prodigious swing. And we thought, okay, we're on here. But it just, you know, I think in the next over, maybe he bowled a wider one to Ibrahim, crunched it through the covers, and they really never looked in any threat to those bowlers. You know, Gurbaz got out, but he sort of got himself out, really. It wasn't a wicket-taking delivery. He kind of just chipped one to the boundary. And yeah, I mean, they made it look easy. And I think we've talked a lot about the openers. We've talked, you know, in the last time we talked about Afghanistan, we talked about Shahidi and Rahmat Shah. And they just went about it in a really calculated way. I think someone said to us on the comments in the past about the influence of Jonathan Trott, and they just play professional cricket kind of in the way that the style that he used to play. And, you know, it's hard for us to know from the outside how much of an impact he personally is making. But, you know, they do look like a side that, I mean, look, you wouldn't get too many arguments from me. And Obviously, they can still make the semi-finals here. This is a big blow for them. But you wouldn't get too many arguments for me if you said Afghanistan have been the fourth best side in this World Cup. I think it's, you know, they absolutely deserve to be in that conversation. They deserve to be in the semi-final hunt. If we weren't, you know, talking about drop, you know, I'm sure we're going to get to drop catches. If we weren't talking about drop catches in that this game and in the New Zealand game is another one that stands out to me where they missed big opportunities to win these games. They could have already sealed their semi-final spot. So, yeah, that look, they've been tremendous in this World Cup and deserve a lot of credit for even the way they built this innings, as you say, because, you know, they were 173 for three when Shahidi gets out in the 38th over, and they scored almost 10 and over from there, you know, get up to 290. Azmat comes in, smashes Stark for six, I think, third ball, and then just punctuated by Rashid Khan's 35 off 18 at the end where he's just playing those whips and all the good stuff that he does at the end. So, yeah, very, very impressive stuff to get to that total. And then, look, I mean, I'm sure we'll get to what they did to start the innings.
Yeah, let's get on to that because, again, it was a performance from a team that gets contributions from players that we may not have expected at the start of the tournament. When we did our preview of Afghanistan, we talked about their spinners and we talked about their opening batters. But, you know, you have a look at the contributions from Rahmat Shah, Shahidi the captain, Azmat, you know, you get something from Rashid Khan at the end, helicoptering the ball out of the park. And then on the other side of the equation, you get the Pacers come out and you get them making inroads into the Australian top order, the much vaunted Australian top order. And it makes it look like, you know, Afghanistan are all over Australia, which they were for the first 15 to 20 overs of this match. There wasn't a lot other than the run out, the hesitation from Manus. There was some really good dismissals in that first four or five wickets for Afghanistan. Australia probably gave a couple of wickets away, but didn't do a lot wrong. They were beaten by some very good bowling, and it just made it look like they were playing on a different pitch. They got the most out of it. They bowled good areas, and you know, Maxwell comes out facing a hat trick, and was only, as Ian Smith again would say, the barest of margins, the faintest of edges that saved him from being out LBW.
Oh yeah, look, we're still not allowed to use that phrase, by the way. just to keep you informed.
Thank you.
But yeah, look, they swung the ball, mm-hmm. didn't they? They swung the ball. Naveen especially nicked off Travis Head with the swing, and that ball that Azmat bowled to Warner through the gate. I mean, probably a loose shot
very
for
loose.
Warner if you want to be really critical. But look, that's a pretty, you know, we talked last time I was on, we were talking about the spinners' dream deliveries. I think that's pretty much a dream delivery for a seamer and a swing bowler as well to go through the gate and someone like David Warner to hit the poles. English has a little fish outside off stump first ball. And yeah, as you say, Maxwell is, you know, a whisker away from being out first ball. And you know, it just sort of all fell apart. I mean, you know, they were... Australia were lost that early wicket, Travis Head, but then they were 43 mm-hmm. for one. Mitchell Marsh looks like he's about to hit Naveen out of the attack. He goes 6-4. And then, yeah, it just all turned to custard. And I don't know. I mean, I guess, as we've said, we don't, you know, we didn't watch that game live from the 90 for 7 mark. I cannot imagine what the Australian supporters were thinking at that point because... Yeah, there was no way back. You know, Ian Smith talked about it in the commentary when I was watching live, you know, in that last hour or so of that game. And he said we were praising Afghanistan because they couldn't lose mm-hmm. from where they were. And Glenn Maxwell, you know.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, amazing.
Let's just cover the Stoinis dismissal because that I think was the only one that may have been a little bit egregious, trying to reverse sweep Rashid Khan on 7 balls when you kind of, what were they at the time when he was dismissed? That made it sort of 80 for 6. So you're 87 for 5. You probably don't need to do that. But I guess you have to take the good with the bad, right? You have to take that kind of dismissal with Maxwell's ability to do what he's just done in this game. So I guess for Australia and for cricket fans, you know, you have to let players play the way they play. Do we want to talk a little bit more about this Glenn Maxwell innings from start to finish? Because he did get a couple of lives early doors, and there was a turning point at 112 for 7 that could easily have shut this game down. given Afghanistan a 100-run win, maybe something like that, maybe more, boosted their net run rate. And, you know, in a sliding doors moment, they're on 10 points going into their final fixture. And the World Cup looks like a very different tournament.
Oh, absolutely. We have to talk more about Maxwell. It's, as I said, it's you know, praising the Australians is not something that I necessarily enjoy every day of the week. But look, we have to do it today. And I mean, yeah, that moment, I mean, you're not going to see an easier chance than that Mujeeb catch. And I think it was almost, you know, I forget the batter. It might have been Tom Latham playing a reverse as well. Or Maxwell's wasn't a reverse, but I think Mujeeb was maybe on the similar field position on the field. But in that New Zealand game, I mean, come on, you got to take those chances. And I mean, they're going to look back at this, that, and, you know, every Afghanistan fan, every neutral fan, every, you know, every Afghanistan player, I think, is going to look back at that moment and think that's, you know, that's, we've dropped the World Cup there. I mean, you know, it's sort of a well worn out phrase that's, but I don't know. I mean, you've got to take those. And in a, you know, I think that's the one part of their game that they'll look back at throughout this World Cup and be disappointed that they didn't take those chances in the field. And it's an area they're going to have to improve if they want to, you know, really, really take that next step.
I completely agree. There was a stat, and it was brought up multiple times during the run chase of, you know, catch efficiency in the World Cup. And England, I think, and a couple of others lead the way around their 85% mark. So England 34 and 6, I think. South Africa, Australia, and a couple of other sides have all dropped sort of 10 or 14 catches. And Afghanistan are one of those nations. I think their catch efficiency was down about 67%. I think they were something like 26 and 13 in terms of catches taken and catches dropped. And, you know, it's, if you're giving international players of that caliber multiple opportunities in their innings, they are going to make you pay. And unfortunately, in a lot of cricket, you can look at a moment and wonder if that was the defining moment. And sometimes you're never quite sure. Oftentimes you're never quite sure, but again, because in a game with 300 deliveries, sometimes there is multiple moments that could come to define an innings, and you can never quite put your finger on, you know, which one was the most important or the turning point. But of this game, you'd have to say, and if Afghanistan don't reach the semi-finals of this World Cup, you would have to say that that is the ball where their fortunes turned. And it was possibly the biggest turning point for them as a country so far in their short international career. Because if that catch gets held, there's no doubt in my mind that Afghanistan win that game. They go to 10 points, equal with Australia. They get a huge net run rate boost, 290 plays 160, say, for the sake of the argument. And Afghanistan all of a sudden have one foot in the door of the semi-finals. So, look, it's an absolutely heartbreaking moment for Mujeeb. I don't want to go into too much hyperbole around that, but it is certainly a significant, unfortunately for Afghanistan, a significant moment for them, and they won't reflect positively on that. But what they should do is reflect positively on the other fantastic cricket that they played in this tournament. And they've got one more game to go out and try and win themselves a semi-final spot. You know, it's in their hands to be able to do that. If they win well in their last game, other things may or may not fall their way, and we could see Afghanistan scrape into that number four spot on run rate. But look, that moment at 112 for seven, where Mujeeb drops Maxwell and he goes on to get 201 not out and win the game, that is the biggest turning point.
Where do we want to pick up with Maxwell? Because, I mean, we could almost go ball by ball at various points. And it was such a, you know, I think the word remarkable has been said, you know, 100 times by everybody watching that game. But it was such an amazing sort of thing to watch, because he gets injured. You touched on it before. Not really gets injured. He gets the cramp and he basically can't move. He just cannot, you know, I think, you know, kids everywhere are going to be just standing, planting their feet and swinging for the next week or so. I think Shane Watson at one point was on commentary going, "You don't even need to move your feet when you do this with your hands." And so he was sort of suggesting that maybe footwork is completely dead now with the way that Maxwell batted. But the fact that they were turning down singles, like, it was such a weird, you know, run chase to watch, because normally in that kind of situation, you're scrapping for every single run, and you know, you're only turning down, you know, singles at a very last moment. But they were turning down singles because, I mean, we haven't met, you know, you mentioned Pat Cummins, I think, before, and said that he was the perfect foil, I think. But, you know, in all of Maxwell's, you know, chaos, Pat Cummins, I think, what did he get, 12 off 68 balls in a chase of 300? But it was absolutely the right thing to do. So, look, you tell me where you want to start with Maxwell, and we'll just carry on from there.
Let's start with the cramp and the injury. I was watching the game. It was very hot. You know, before the game, there was a lot spoken about, mostly by Matthew Hayden, around that the heat in the stadium. It was up sort of 36, 37 degrees at one point during the course of the day. So, you know, even in the evening, there was a lot of fatigue. Australia were asked to field in the heat for 50 overs. You know, Afghanistan did a great job of keeping Australia out there that whole time, and really wearing Australia down. And we saw that in the England game, actually, as well, where they were unable to recover from being out in the field in that kind of hot weather. As it turned out, Maxwell, shades of Dean Jones in his double hundred in India way back in, what, I think, 83, 84, where he scored a famous double hundred and was physically ill on the ground, was suffering with cramp. This was the same kind of situation. I actually think Maxwell may have pinched a nerve somewhere in there as well. There was one or two shots where he physically reacted as he tried to hit the ball, almost like he had pinched a nerve somewhere in his back. He was getting treatment from the physio in that lumbar or lower back area, as well as the cramp. So, look, it was we start to run out of superlatives when we talk about not only Maxwell's physical gifts, which were all on display, but his mental strength as well. It must have been so easy to retire hurt at that point. I mean, there was one stage where Maxwell hit a shot, ran a single, and then just became almost rigor mortis. He went completely stiff and just fell onto the ground completely stiff, in what could only be an entire body cramp at that point. His shirt was drenched. Zampa was down on the boundary at one point, ready to come on as a replacement. He was waved away. It, for all of the physically brilliant things Glenn Maxwell did in this innings, and he has done over his entire career, his mental strength in that moment, when every fiber and sinew and muscle in his body is telling him to give up, for him to be able to stay in the fight and stay with that game, and win it for Australia, I will live with that memory of his mental fortitude forever. He's a lovely, lovely guy, Glenn Maxwell, and I'm so glad that he has now got a career-defining moment that not just speaks to his physical talents and his prowess and his hand-eye coordination, but his overcoming a significant mental challenge. And I mean that in terms of being able to override the pain in his body, and understand the requirement for him to have to be there at the end and to overcome all of that pressure, that situational pressure as well, to come up with, I think, I can't remember a better chasing innings than that in my living memory, certainly not in a World Cup.
Yeah, the records, you know, the records that he broke during that innings, and I think it is actually it's not something I'd really thought about, but it's a fantastic point about the mental part of it, because he actually talked after, I listened to his interview and then the interview of the captains afterwards, and he talked about how, you know, he said straight up, he said, you know, I had a few chances in that innings, and he said, when I've had those chances in the past, sometimes I haven't actually followed it through to the end. And I haven't made the most of those chances. And it, like, some, I think that the whoever was interviewing him said, you know, is this your greatest innings for Australia? And he sort of didn't really answer that question directly, but he said, that's what I'm most proud of, the fact that I did this and I carried it through to the end and got us home. So, yeah, I think, you know, he should be, obviously, he should be enormously proud of what he's done today. I mean, yeah, just the kind of, I think it's the, you know, highest score for Australia now in an ODI. I think it's the highest score for a number six ever in ODI cricket, if I'm not wrong. Highest ever eighth wicket partnership. Like, there's just records and records that that he broke today. And can we just talk a little bit about some of those shots that he played? Because there were just some remarkable ones. I've written down some, but I didn't ball by ball them, so I don't quite know when they were. But I've got reverse lapse 6, pull to mid wicket, flick off Naveen, and then like that last. I mean that last sort of over the way he sort of finished it. I think with 20 to get off Naveen, and he just goes 6 second ball, 6 third ball, 4 fourth ball, and then 6 fifth ball to bring up the 100. I mean 201 out of 293, and some of the shots at the end when he just couldn't move, absolutely amazing. And Ian Smith was loving this. It was he was having a great time in commentary. I've written down it. One of us, he says, he gets down the other end like Charlie Chaplin when he finally, with about 30 runs to go, shocked the Afghanistan players by deciding that he would start taking singles again when he hit it to the boundary. So, yeah, look, he was fist pumping to the changing room when he was taking the singles, not the boundaries, which was awesome as well. And, yeah, that Australian dressing room was a sight to watch. So, yeah, like honestly, I think if anyone hasn't seen, like if people are going to watch the highlights, I think that they should. Genuinely, if you only have an hour, don't watch the highlights. Go back and watch the last hour of the way that game panned out, because it's so worth it. Just for all the different kind of weird things that were going on, and weird shots and celebrations and all of it. It really was a fun watch.
And you've touched on a point there that I wanted to make sure we picked up on in this podcast. And it's the way that Maxwell and Cummins planned that chase, and they planned it beautifully, because they weren't concerned about Cummins's contribution. All they were concerned about was that Cummins was able to face out whoever he was facing at his end and to give as much strike to Maxwell as possible. And some of that kind of broke down when Maxwell was unable to run singles. But once the adrenaline got going again and they only needed 30 or 40 to get, and he could sort of get his body through on that adrenaline, get through to the other end for singles, they rotated the strike well in terms of farming it for Maxwell. Maxwell was never down one end at the non-strikers for too long, getting cramped and then getting mentally frustrated. So even though Cummins was 12 off 68, they picked the balls where they needed to attack. They took the singles that they needed to get, and they just trusted that Maxwell would hit the ball out of the park. And as it turns out, Wankhede Stadium's not big enough for Glenn Maxwell, any part of it, let alone the long part or the short part. So 21 fours, 10 sixes, you know, the ground is not big enough for that human being. But I just wanted to give credit to the way that they chased that, because it would have been so easy getting 10 off the over to try and then get 20 or 24 off an over. But they got a 6, they got a 4. If Cummins was on strike, he made sure he faced out the deliveries that he needed to. You know, he got a bit lucky. He played and missed quite a bit, particularly to a couple of wrongins from Noor Ahmed, went past the outside edge, etc. But the way that they planned that chase was just awesome. And one of the comments, I think, on the stump mic that I picked up was Cummins had blocked out 3 or 4 balls in a row, and someone must have said something to him. And he just laughed and said, "It's still a run of ball, mate. It's still just a run of ball here." And so Australia were always just making sure they kept that target, that run rate required within touching distance of a run of ball. And as Maxwell hit the ball further and further and found the gap with one hand and found the gap with a reverse lap shot off the top of off stump, the one from Naveen was the one that will stick with me for a long time, because he couldn't move. And Naveen bowled the best ball that he could bowl. It was going to cannon into the top of off stump. And Maxwell just turned his wrists and flicked the ball past the wicketkeeper. I can't even remember whether it went for 4 or 6. I was just in awe of his ability to figure out that shot. It was just the most remarkable innings.
It certainly was. And look, and the result now, there's a lot to play for three sides now, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and New Zealand. Going into these final games, I think we've got plenty of time to kind of talk about that over the next couple of days. And I think, you know, we probably should just, I mean, Pat Cummins called it the greatest ODI innings that's ever happened. You know, I'm not enough of a cricket historian to qualify that statement, but it's certainly got to be up there. And I think you should finish the pod, Baldy. I mean, it has been spectacular to watch for me, you know, in so many different ways. And I think it's down to you to take us out.
Well, I think this is one of those days where everyone has watched this innings, and if you ask the population in 20 years' time, there'll be 1.5 million people who will have been at Wankhede Stadium having watched this game. This is, I think, very rare for cricketing circles, one of those "where were you" moments where Maxwell got a double 100 to chase down 291. It is one of the most remarkable scenes that I have seen in cricket in my living memory. It's one of the most remarkable innings that I've seen in living memory. Unfortunately, there had to be a loser in this game, and I feel so deeply for the Afghanistan players and coaches who've had such a wonderful tournament and to come up against that kind of heartbreak. But that's sport and life, and unfortunately, there had to be a loser on the day, and for Afghanistan, their number was up in that sense. But they have been outstanding in this game of cricket. They were very unfortunate, I think, to lose it. But for one moment, they would have won that game. But for Glenn Maxwell in Australia, it is an innings that will cover up an average game for that country. I think it's fair to say Australia did not play well in that game, with the exception of Glenn Maxwell and Pat Cummins with the bat. But, you know, that's also sport and life. And Australia go on to 12 points. They're now in the semi-finals against South Africa. We've got England and the Netherlands tonight. The Netherlands have everything to play for. Can they back up their two wins against Bangladesh and South Africa with a win against England? Can England salvage some pride with a couple of victories in their last two games? And then we go into the last slate of games, sort of November 9 to 12, where everyone plays one more game before the semi-finals. As you say, Stu, Pakistan, New Zealand and Afghanistan still have aspirations for semi-finals play, so we'll see what transpires over the next 3 or 4 days in terms of their futures. It's been brilliant being on the pod with you again, Stuart. Just, as I say, an absolutely remarkable last hour and a half of our lives, and we're very humbled to be able to share it with you listeners and viewers on the Top Order podcast. So thank you for staying with us this morning. Take care of yourselves and each other, and we'll see you tomorrow on the Top Order podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.